Kevin, are you taping? You ready?
Make sure I get whatever communicable diseases are on there. Yeah.
We Listerine those things, man.
Where has this microphone been?
Where has it not been?
Oh, every it's state. That kind of a band.
Yeah. Every state.
Yeah. Are we ready to go?
Yes.
Okay. We're so graced today to have Umphreys McGee joining us, and we're actually doing this from the stage of Liberty Hall at Soundcheck prior to their performance, and it's so good for you guys to come around as often as you do and play for us. I know you got a big fan base, and it's nice to see you out.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Just really quickly, I want to run down the names. Brendan, Jake, Joel, Andy, Chris, Ryan, everybody's here. And, of course, this tour in support of Mantis, Umphrey McGee's eighth album. And so Mantis, it actually, you have in your materials a couple of different definitions, and I'm not sure which one is supposed to take precedence, but Mantis, Greek word for prophet, is that a good place to start?
It's a good place to start, yeah. It's kind of grandiose in its topics.
You know, I think that one of the things that really struck me about the album as I was listening to it is that you guys are so well known for being, an improvisational band, but this is a really produced record. This is tight. There's not a lot of, you know, loose stretching out. I mean, everything's very intentional and everything's very precise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was definitely an intention of ours to want to make something that we'd want to pop in our CD players or have in our rotation list, listening list. And really tried to make every second count on the record and really comb through it. And it's all about like kind of rough draft, second draft, third draft, fourth draft of a song. And by the end, all six of us and the producers and everyone who's involved feels very everyone's like, yeah, this is going to work. This is the cut that's going to make the record.
You know, it just sounds so different from what a lot of improvisational acts do, though. They take that loose thing that happens on the stage into the studio. But this harkens back to sort of the beginning, to me anyway, to the beginnings. And you listen to some of the bands in the 70s or even 60s that inspired the jam band scene, and a lot of them were really tight like this.
We play so many shows that we have time to be loose 5 days a week, 3 weeks out of every month.
And then, of course, you take this material out on the stage, and you'll loosen this up on stage.
Yeah. Loosely tight.
And,
yes.
and we didn't play any of these cuts on the record until it was released. So it was kind of like learning a cover CD almost all over again. You know, we had to go back and revisit everything, go, okay, we were playing that then, because some of these tracks were recorded 2 years ago. So, and then you kind of go back and revisit and go, we got to play this stuff live, 2009.
So now why did, because I know in the past you guys have worked a lot of the songs out on stage before you went into the studio. So is this about the whole mystique issue?
We are very mysterious by nature.
I think we were due for something like this. That feeling of when you're in high school and your favorite band puts out a record and you haven't heard anything and you get to listen to it five times in a row for a week and you're still finding new stuff. Everything else we'd put out, people had heard before. So we wanted to be, like Joel said, mysterious.
Yeah. You know, the thing that struck me about the record, and I know that in previous interviews that you guys have done, you've invoked the names of some different bands that have inspired you, but the name of a band that came up a couple of times that, I don't know if everybody else is going to feel this way, but, you know, you mentioned the Beatles, and there are a lot of hard changes in this record that remind me of what the Beatles were doing later in their careers.
Yeah, if you really listen to the record, there's not a lot of complication really in the record. The complication lies in the structure of the music. And the sort of the architecture. And if you go inside the record, you'll find a lot of that old Abbey Road type structuring, you know, where there's a lot of great chord progressions and great harmonies and subharmonies and, you know, melodies over the top of, so it creates a big sediment.
Some of the sequencing I feel like they did with their albums is pretty impressive too. And that's another thing where we try to really look at key changes and tempo changes and line things up in a way that they made sense back to back with each other.
You know, one of the things I was trying to put into perspective while I was doing research was that it felt like, okay, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys worked out of at least three different studios, and you know, you worked as individuals, you worked as a band, And that, too, is a lot like the way the Beatles used to work. You know, there were times when everybody else would leave and Paul would work on it. Or, you know, they'd come in and John would have a song, you know, already partly laid down. And then everybody else would add their parts. And it just seemed like a...
If you want to keep comparing us to them, I mean, this is awesome. A great interview.
It'd be the Ruttles. You know?
Yeah. That's the theory. You give everybody the Beatles stuff up front, and you hit them with the hard stuff at the end after you got them on your side. That's... the way this one works.
There seemed to be a lot
to live up to now. Great.
Yeah.
There seemed to be a bit of influence from also Beach Boys and the chorale parts, which you can't overlook as well.
Yeah.
It's
an
influence, you know, like during that era with the Beatles and the Beach Boys doing similar things, and the Led Zeppelin too, Pink Floyd. You know, a lot of those bands were part of this whole idea.
Trying to spend more time at the beach, though. I think that you hear that as well. Those kind of harmonies, those major sevens, major nine chords.
Beach sounds, yes.
That's what the beach sounds like.
Well, you mentioned the Beach Boys, at the same time that the Beatles were happening, and they used to say all the time about how they were challenged by each other's records.
Totally.
Do you have a band like that?
Yeah, the Beatles.
They're called Trainwreck.
You're really hoping that their next record answers this one, right?
Actually, Trainwreck is the answer for
they're
that.
Like, they're kind of our nemesis, and they're always like one step ahead of us. That's the amazing thing. So I'm sure we've already lost.
They've got a lot of money from Kodak behind them.
And it's amazing because it's like a mind trick, because now we're losing more fans than them because I've just informed our fans about them again.
Where's the mystery?
Come on!
You guys have a wonderful website, umphreys.com, and if you go out and pick up Mantis, which is on Psy Fidelity Records, and pop it in your computer, it unlocks all kinds of bonus content from the website. And you guys are really web savvy, and you record virtually every show, sell the show. So, for instance, the people that see the show at Liberty Hall can get that disc live. That's all pretty savvy. That's pretty smart. And you're building a huge fan base, I would imagine, just by embracing the fans the way that you do.
Absolutely.
Kind of have to. The way the technology is now, it's there. We have the option. Plus, we have our sound guy, Kevin, who tapes everything, like things that we don't know and
even
don't want
sleeping.
To be taped or taped.
So it's sort of like you guys have not been, you've invited tapers, but why would anybody tape when you can get something that sounds usually so much better when it's done the way that it should be done.
Millions and millions of dollars go into this recording we're about to do.
So we covered a little bit of the studio side, but the improvisation side, I've had lots of conversations with people, bands that maybe didn't want to admit that they didn't improvise as much as their reputation maybe called for, or if they did improvise, they didn't want to talk about how they did it. But you guys are pretty open about using hand signals and gestures, and you also have, now correct me if I'm wrong, but you can talk to each other during the show without having it go out to the front of the house. And so you'll actually talk during the set to let each other know what's coming up, right?
Yeah, when there's a really bad solo, we'll bring it to that guy's attention and be like,
like
keep
hey.
It trying.
Yeah.
Bring him down.
F minus. Thumbs up means thumbs down, really, in our world. Yeah, so it's that kind of energy that I think really propels us toward what we're shooting for.
You guys clearly have a great collective sense of humor about things. I know you also usually manage to work in a cover or two, and I have to say that sometimes it's like you guys reach down and find a song just to see if let's see if we can resurrect this particular thing, that maybe isn't the first thing people would think of you guys covering.
Well, part of our job is to educate some of these people. Like Andy, for example, had never heard the song I've Got a Feeling by the Beatles, but he's a Beatles fan. Not to bring it back to the Beatles. But in some way we are trying to... There's some kids out there that there's some good music that they're not going to catch otherwise.
Yeah, I think I've Got a Feeling is maybe one of the great stereo separation records of all time. You got Paul in one ear and John in the other. That's a pretty good headspace.
I like that description. One of the greatest stereo separation records ever.
Yeah.
That's nice.
But, you know, that really wasn't what I was alluding to. You guys were playing something at Soundcheck talking about it being an American Idol song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it's like, how often do you reach for the American Idol songs?
Not often enough. I think that's not our target audience.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope it's not.
Well, there is something, though, about taking a song that most people think is not really a great song, maybe because of the way it was presented or who it was that presented it, and turning it into something special.
But we're going to do that with some Milli Vanilli tunes
in the future.
I feel like that was their big issue.
Well, I have to tell you all, this is not only a great CD, but this is a surprising CD, because you guys have played against your reputation. Not that there's anything wrong with your reputation, but when you do things that people don't expect, it's surprising. It also shows depth and growth, and you guys should really be proud of Mantis. This is a really great piece of work, and it's available now in Psy Fidelity. And thanks for taking the time today, and thanks for sharing the music.
Thanks, Jim. We like you.
And here they are, the New Beatles.
The new Beatles.
Joel, you gonna set us up with a?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
So Radioland, he's actually playing a cello right now. We gotta break it out.
To try.